The other day, the New York Post ran a picture of Lindsay Lohan looking a little worse for wear after a drunk driving arrest. Not unusual. Lindsay Lohan's mugshot is a tabloid mainstay. But this one was part of an ad. Ignition interlocks are a good idea for Lindsay, the ad said, but a bad idea for us. They defined us with pictures of a bride and groom toasting and a few guys in button-down shirts raising beer glasses. Basically, the ad says ignition interlocks, or in-car breathalyzers, are a great tool for getting hardcore drunks off our roads. However, the ad asserts, activists now want to put one in every car in America. That means the end of moderate and responsible drinking prior to driving. The ad directs the reader to interlockfacts.com, a website with a slew of anti-mandatory interlock statistics. So who's behind the ad? The American Beverage Institute, supported by the restaurant industry. The main activist said to want mandatory interlocks on all cars is Mothers Against Drunk Driving. Chuck Hurley, the CEO of MAD, objects to the ads. He says his group doesn't want in-car breathalyzers everywhere. It isn't against legalizing moderate drinking and driving. And it doesn't favor lowering the definition of legally drunk.
We do support, in fact, are very interested in the exploration of advanced technologies that could be in all vehicles on a voluntary basis that would not allow them to be driven above the legal limit of 0.08. The ads by the chain restaurants intentionally distorted our position on that.
Sarah Longwell is a spokesperson for the American Beverage Institute. She joins us from our studio in Washington, D.C. Hi, Sarah.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Sure. Who is the American Beverage Institute?
Well, we're a restaurant trade association, and we promote moderate and responsible consumption and simply protect people's right to drink moderately and responsibly prior to driving.
Any restaurants we know behind it?
It's sort of generally, you know, America's favorite family chain restaurant. So, you know, probably some that you were talking about just before in your segment on the review.
Right. So summarize the major point of this ad campaign, which I should say was not only in the New York Post, but USA Today. And I don't know if it was anywhere else.
Yeah. And we're going to continue the campaign because, you know, we're trying to educate the public about the fact that there are these groups out there who want to put this technology in all cars. They want it to come as standard equipment. And the fact is, Chuck's really parsing his words carefully, you know, in what he was saying before. The fact is, Matt has gone on the record repeatedly advocating for mandatory ignition interlocks in all cars. And it's not just them. You know, the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, which is, you know, the traffic safety branch of the federal government, has just committed $10 million to developing the technology to the point where it can be in all cars and can be sort of unobtrusive. I mean, they've got technology now that's going to read BAC levels through the moisture in your hands that has, you know, retinal scans or little sniffers that sniff out alcohol. And, you know, they're doing this because they want it to be able to be like airbags, where it's there in the car, but you don't notice it unless you need it or it's triggered.
Couple questions. If it stops drunk driving, why is that a bad thing?
Well, you know, that's the point of the ad, though. I mean, we're advocating for the technology to stop drunk driving. What we don't want is for it to be applied to people who are not drunk. And the fact is, you know, Chuck doesn't believe, because we debate them all the time. We deal with them all the time. Mothers Against Drunk Driving, a lot of times NHTSA has gone on the record saying this. They don't think it's okay to have one drink prior to driving. And once this technology is in all cars, it is not going to be set at 0.08. You know, I've heard Chuck say before that they would advocate that it be set at 0.08. But the fact is, Mothers Against Drunk Driving talks about constantly about you cannot drink and drive. And the fact is, it is legal in all 50 states to drink moderately and responsibly driving.
That point is something that Chuck Hurley, when I talked to him earlier, made exactly. Let me just play a little of that.
Sure.
In fact, it is legal to drink and drive in all 50 states. We don't recommend it. We do believe best policy is not drink and drive, but it shouldn't be criminalized until 0.08.
So there he says, and he expanded with me, that he doesn't believe there should be any technology that bars someone who's not already an offender from getting into their car after having a drink or two drinks as long as they're under the legal limit. Do you think he's lying?
Well, what I think that Chuck is trying to do is that they know that the public is not on their side on this issue just yet. And they're trying to normalize the equipment in the eyes of the public before they can get it in all cars. And so what I think he's doing is I think he's choosing his words carefully right now so that they can take incremental steps to get the technology in all cars. I mean, what they're trying to do right now, I mean, where the legislation is for the most part now, is trying to get the technology mandated for low BAC first-time offenders.
That's blood alcohol content. Get it mandatory for people who've been convicted of drunk driving, so that they can't start their cars with even a beer in them.
Yes, because they would be set very low. Well, we think that it's fine. I mean, again, the reason that we ran the ad was to go after hardcore repeat offenders or high BAC drunk drivers.
Well, what's wrong with going after just a one-time offender?
Well, because then you're talking about somebody who might be one sip over 0.08. I mean, a 120-pound woman can drink 2 6-ounce glasses of wine and be at 0.08. And so do you think that she should be punished the same way as the guy who's had 10 beers? I mean, we don't. The fact is, you know, we have graduated penalties in this country where the punishment fits the crime. And, you don't punish somebody who's driving 30 miles over the speed limit the same way you'd punish somebody going 5 miles over the speed limit.
Those are
two different levels of crime. And the fact is,
is the question one of punishing that person or one of protecting everyone else? Lindsay Lohan, you point to because she's well known and the ad worked well, it got picked up everywhere, but sure. You say that she is a repeat offender, and
right.
What MAD wants to do is put the technology in cars even if someone has been convicted once. Why do you object to it being put in cars if someone has a drunk driving conviction under their belt?
Well, again, I mean, what we're talking about is a distinction where the punishment fits the crime. You know, we fully support the technology for high BAC repeat offenders like Lohan, but think that it's going too far to mandate the technology for somebody who might be one sip over the legal limit. Those people have presented two very different levels of threat to traffic safety, and they should be treated differently. And the other reason that we object to it is that we know that what's going on here is these groups, NHTSA, MAD, et cetera, they're trying to normalize the equipment in the minds of the public by getting it in more cars now, by passing more legislation, so that ultimately they can put it in all cars. And, I mean, we're essentially trying to draw a line to keep sort of this creeping mandating of interlocks from going further.
Your site says, quote, that interlocks create de facto prohibition. And it even forecasts into the future and says that by the year 2019, the legal limit will be 0.03. How could you know that?
Well, I mean, it's just experience. I mean, we deal with this stuff all the time.
No, experience is things that happened already. I'm asking you how you know stuff that happens in the future.
Let's look at things that have happened already. So we know that Mothers Against Drunk Driving constantly talks about the fact that they don't think it's okay to have one drink prior to driving.
But he said to me that whether he thinks it's okay, Mothers Against Drunk Driving does not advocate for a change in the law.
Exactly. And as I was saying before, you know, what he's trying to do is you know, parse his words carefully now, because as soon as this technology is in all cars, they are going to work tirelessly to get the BAC levels set lower. And the fact is, once they're in all cars, there are things called presumptive intoxication laws in 24 states. That means that if you are at a 0.04 or 0.05 in these 24 states, you can be presumed to be intoxicated and convicted if you get, you know, stopped at a sobriety checkpoint and they find you to have a BAC level of 0.04 or 0.05. The technology will have to be set at those levels. And then there's also liability concerns. You know, if you blow into your breathalyzer or the car doesn't detect any alcohol, it lets you drive, and then you get pulled over or you get in an accident and they do find that you've been drinking, you know, you can sue the interlock company. So there's going to have to be a cushion there. And by the time you factor in and then you're going to have activist group pressure to have these things set much, much lower, because they obviously don't believe that you should be able to have one drink prior to driving. And that those confluence of events is going to end up with these things set prohibitively low. I mean, that's how you get the de facto prohibition. And what we're trying to do, I mean, you talk about looking into the future, is, yeah, we're trying to warn the public that this is where we're headed. Because if people don't realize that there are these groups that want to go in this direction, I mean, I've heard Chuck personally say that he wants to see interlocks in all cars, and that
he personally told me that he doesn't think that interlocks would be the technology, that it would be other technology.
What he's talking about, though, is he's talking about what I was just talking about, the new technology, the steering wheel sensors, the retinal scans, and maybe those aren't called interlocks, I don't know, but he's talking about unobtrusive technology. And so, again, I think it's a parsing of words.
So you don't believe any government official who says that we're going to have interlocks at 0.08. You just think that as soon as they say 0.08, they really mean one drink. It's got to be a slippery slope no matter what.
No, I know that it can't be set at 0.08. I know that there's 24 states where right now you can be convicted at 0.04, or 0.05. So I know that in those states they can't set them at 0.08, and I know for liability concerns they're not going to be set them at 0.08. I mean, we can know those things now.
Well, does your group think 0.08 is too low?
We did. The fact is you are more dangerous talking on a hands-free cell phone than you are driving at 0.08. And we definitely fought when they were trying to lower the legal limit from 0.10 to 0.08. We definitely fought that because the problem is that there's a misunderstanding about where drunk driving deaths occur. I mean, the average blood alcohol content level of somebody in an alcohol-related fatality is 0.19. These deaths, I mean, that's more than twice the legal limit. These dangerous people are driving to extremely high BAC levels, and those are the people that do damage out on the highway, and everybody wants them off the road. But if you get down to 0.08, 0.10, these are not where fatalities are occurring.
But do statistics show that 0.08 has lowered fatalities? I have a ream of statistics with
you. No, absolutely not. In fact, that's one of the most interesting things.
Well, here are some of the
Mothers
things.
Mothers Against Drunk Driving said that it was going to save thousands and thousands of lives, and it hasn't been borne out at all.
Well, in Illinois enacted a 0.08 law in 1997, 13.7 decline in the number of drink driving fatal crashes. California experienced a 12% reduction in alcohol fatalities after they went to 0.08. National Highway and Traffic Safety Association found in 16 states, lowering the limit to 0.08 resulted in an 8% decrease in fatal alcohol-related crashes. Perhaps not a huge increase, but those are all lives saved.
Right. Well, I mean, obviously, I don't know the statistics you're looking at. I don't have those in front of me, but I know that the national statistics over the last about 8 years have pretty much flatlined in terms of whether or not we're saving more lives. And, you know, you're looking, they're obviously cherry picking data there from different states. So
no, that was just National Highway Traffic Safety Administration. But are you saying they flatlined
saying they looked at 16 states.
They flatlined since it went to 0.08? So it hasn't gotten better since it went to 0.08, but it did get better from 0.10. No?
No. I guess it's been the last like 7 or 8 years where there's really been no change. In fact, they were doing a congressional review recently over the course of the last few years to actually determine why drunk driving deaths weren't going down anymore. And the reason is that we've completely taken our eye off the ball. We're not actually going after drunk drivers anymore. If you concentrate your efforts on moderate and responsible social drinkers who are drinking below 0.08, then of course you're not going to save lives because those aren't the places where lives are being lost. You need to concentrate on the high BAC repeat offender types who are really causing fatalities on the highway. Those people need treatment. They need to be off the roads. I mean, put the technology in their car. We are all for it. Nobody wants drunk drivers on the road. I mean, you know, we all have families. We all drive on the roads. There's nobody in the universe who's going to say they want drunk drivers on the road.
When you talk about wanting these interlock technology and repeat offenders, but not necessarily first offenders, because as the point you were made, the punishments should be different. First offenders, well, you tell me if you have different statistics on this, but the best statistics I've seen is that first offenders, in other words, people who were caught, are not first-time drunk drivers. They're repeat drunk drivers, even if they're first offenders.
I know that MAD cites that a lot. I've never seen the study where that comes from, that people drive sort of, I mean, is because if they're getting that number, it's because they're asking drunk drivers, how many times do you drive drunk? That must be where they're getting it. I've never believed that number. I hear it thrown around a lot.
It doesn't make sense. You think that people who are caught the first time, that's the first time they've driven drunk?
I mean, maybe for some of them, but I've never seen I've never seen an academic study that says, you know, we've really looked at this and we've found that we've determined that, first time offenders truly drink. I mean, they say something like 80 times. I've just never seen any proof of it.
All right. Well, Sarah Longwell, who is the spokesperson for the American Beverage Institute, it was a good discussion. And by the way, congratulations, because this ad got picked up everywhere. So your point is out there.
It did. Thanks a lot.
All right. Thanks, Sarah.
That does it for this hour of the BPP. We don't go away online, though. Join us at npr.org/Bryant Park. I'm Rachel Martin.
And I am Mike Pesca. And this is the Bryant Park Project from NPR News.